Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer. He's so happy he never became a teacher, Williams.
I don't have the spirit for teaching.
I mean, there was a time.
Not,
yeah, you know that nah, time.
That
yeah,
count.
Yeah, that's a whole nother episode.
What?
And speaking of past trauma, we got what? Back with us intern Sarah with us.
Hi, I'm glad to be back.
We can see that. We can see how excited you are. You're like exactly. And speaking of garbly gook, we are going to be talking about the recently dropped film in theaters, and that is Weapons. So stick around as we dive into that movie, talk about it, get into the nitty gritty of it, and have some fun. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us that opening credits?
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
Week.
On all your favorite streaming platforms and on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101. Also, we're on Blue Sky at filmlosophers podcast.
That's right. We had a website. We have a website, not had. We have a website.
Yeah.
And if you head on over to filmlosopherspodcast.com, there we got allegedly over 300 episodes. Everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, Amazon Music, TuneIn to Your Heart's Desire, on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a like, a subscribe, or a follow. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
And of course, always drop us comments in the comment section down below. We love reading those and hearing what you think. And of course, we will give you the rest of the social links at the end of the episode. We have a great show in store. Like I said, we're going to be talking about this movie, Weapons, which just recently dropped. And there's a lot of conversation around it, and there's a lot of things people are saying in regards to not only the nature of the movie, but also the nature of pretty much how it's being delivered. And we'll talk about all of that. But before we do,
no,
we have a game. Yes, nothing like a game to bring together a horror movie review, right?
Right.
It
suppose.
Just makes perfect sense. And this one is called Kill Count Conundrum.
Oh, gosh.
So I will be, and this will be collaborative, so that way you don't have to fret Spencer.
Oh, I just assumed Sarah was going to trounce me.
Well, I mean, that's typically the case. But in this particular endeavor, what we're going to do is we are going to go through a couple of questions. And we're going to ask, I'm going to ask you, or I'm going to make a statement, make a fact, as to whether or not how, what the kill count was for a particular film.
Okay.
There are going to be some you know, some you don't know. And your guess is going to be either if it is too high or too low or if it's correct.
Okay.
All right. Does that make sense? Sarah, mm-hmm. Looks like you're having questions.
So for you making the statement, are you saying the film and then the number of how many kills there are, or are you...
Sarah, you're really overcomplicating this.
You have to wait. You have to see what's going to happen.
We haven't even started. Oh, my gosh. And to kick it off, for the 50th anniversary of this film, we're going to use this as our waiting music. Number one, Jason Voorhees racks up 21 kills in Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. This is, by the way, you have to talk to each other.
Yes, I know. You were talking.
I'm talking to her as well. Just
this
making
is
sure.
Audio podcast. We can't talk over each other.
You're looking at each other like giving the eye signals like, no, you have to talk.
Dead silence.
So Part 6, you said the number was 21 kills?
Yes.
No. You think no?
I have not seen this.
I have not seen this one either. So
okay.
I've only seen part one.
Okay. How many? Well, that's part one, though. That's before it probably got ridiculous. Can we get a year Or can I look up a year?
No. What is wrong with you?
I want because that,
just
because
that's, number that's of kills.
When was the last time you went on Jeopardy and they were like, Alex, let me go ahead and bust out my laptop real quick to get some details first. Yeah, no.
This is not Jeopardy because I don't have to give you an answer.
It's still
a
game
question.
Show. Come on.
I'm just saying that.
Your time is up. What's the answer? Is it too high or too low?
Low.
Too low.
I have to find our
See, now who's not ready?
You know what? There you go.
I don't know if that's out of spite or not.
So you had said too low. It was actually too high. The actual count was 18.
Mm.
So good job.
It's only three off, so
still incorrect. Number two. Michael Myers kills more people in Halloween Kills from 2021 than the entire original franchise up to that point.
So you're saying, so okay, hold on. I'll talk to you for this because if I ask questions, I'll be like, so are you saying in total, like on the entire original franchise?
Yes.
Before the new ones,
yeah.
He's killed more people in Halloween Kills than he has in the original franchise.
That's the question.
Okay. I will say that maybe, just maybe, he did.
Are you talking to me or are you talking to your partner over there?
Do you think he did? I think he might
my
have.
Gosh, like,
I
he
do
did.
Not my brain.
I don't remember how many kills were in Halloween Kills, and I do know I watched that movie.
That is true.
Yeah, so I'm going to say true.
I'm going to agree true.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. He actually kills over 30 people, his highest kill count in a single film.
Cool.
So... there you go. You got one right, one wrong. You guys are just about even keel. Let's go to the next one. In Final Destination 2, 13 people die. Most in creatively Rube Goldberg style deaths. True or false?
Okay, hold on. So we got. Didn't he?
You have till the end of this song.
Okay. So basically.
Thirteen people.
That's very unlucky. Wouldn't
that
you say that's unlucky?
Perfect.
It's right on the money.
Yes.
So you're saying correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go. There's hope for you guys yet.
It's only because it was 13.
that's literally the
this
only
is our
reason.
Saving grace from the Friday the 13th question.
All right. What is that? Two correct, one wrong?
Yes.
So you're on question four.
No, we can end right here.
Question four. Ghostface in Scream 2 from 1997.
Oh, this one has a year.
Yeah. Because this is a franchise. Has like a lower kill count.
Scream 2s. That doesn't
has a
sense.
Lower kill count than in the original film.
Okay, so I had to listen to like some of my previous episodes, and still from that year up till now, so like 2022, 2023, when the news, like the first of the reboot for Scream came out, or the continuation, I still have not seen Scream 2 because Peacock or Paramount Plus, whoever had them, still.
That
maybe that's
chihuahua.
Just a personal problem. Yeah. So I'm thinking with this question that maybe, just maybe, that you said that there's more kills in Scream 2 than Scream 1?
Has a lower kill count than the first film.
Okay, so you see, not a lot of people died in the first one, so you can only go up from there.
That's not true. You could go to zero. Just threaten people, but then don't kill them.
You
but,
give them life-threatening injuries and just get
you,
like...
You kill nobody in a slasher franchise, and they give you four more movies. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, weirder things have happened.
You are right.
Yeah, let's say that... Wait, you said lower?
Yeah.
Yeah, so not that.
Higher, so higher. Higher kill count? Question mark.
Is this your guys' final? I think I'm about to switch to the, how to, you know, whatever that millionaire show was theme song, because you guys aren't even sure about
it. I would like to phone a friend.
Well, you don't have any friends here. Right? So, so again, so Ghostface in Scream 2 has a lower kill count than in the original film. True or false?
True.
What?
Huh, wait,
no,
what?
Wait, what? That question is phrased in such a way. False, I think, is what we want. False. Because we said higher.
Okay, I'm trying to make sure I'm following your logic.
See, that's hard.
Yeah, if you wanted just to answer the question.
Yeah, whatever.
All right.
Yeah.
It actually had 10 kills compared to the original film having only 7.
There we go.
Yay. I'm like, there's only a couple people that died in the first one.
7 people.
7 people.
All right. Yeah, we're going to have
to. We're 3-1.
We're going to have to do this one.
We are stumbling our way.
Here we go.
Success.
Here we go. Question 5.
Uh-huh.
Chucky.
Oh, no.
Killed more people.
Oh, no.
In Bride of Chucky in 1998 than in the first two films combined.
Hmm. I thought this was going to be a question for like Cult of Chucky or what was the one after Cult of Chucky?
You're asking a lot of questions and a lot of time is passing by.
So basically.
Because you're looking at Chucky, you're looking at Child's Play, Chucky 2.
Chucky 2, I thought it was Child's Play 2.
I think it's Child's Play 2. Yeah, the first three are Child's Plays.
Yeah.
So Child's Play 1, Child's Play 2, Child's Play 3, and then it turns into the Chucky movies.
And so the question is that
Okay,
I'm making
Chucky
sure.
Killed more people in Bride of Chucky than in the first two films combined.
In the first two films, he's killed like a fair amount of people. I don't
think. Have you seen Bride of Chucky?
No.
Yeah, I haven't either. Let's go with yes. No. No.
No.
No.
False.
Okay.
Oh, because him and Tiffany are on a killing
streak.
So
he racks up a whopping 12 kills in Bride compared to 6 in Child's Play and 8 in Child's Play 2.
Huh? That's not mathing.
That's more.
That's more. Hit the correct buzzer. You said 8 and 6. 6 plus 6 is 12 plus 2 is 14.
Yeah.
Hit the correct button, please.
You said false, though. You both said false.
Yeah, he didn't kill more in that movie than the other two.
I asked, Chucky killed more people in The Bride of Chucky than the first two films. True or false?
No, I heard the opposite. You see?
It's a wording thing right now.
It's a wording.
Because me and film philosopher Spencer were synced up and we're both like incorrect.
Yeah, so you guys got it wrong.
No,
we got it right.
You got it wrong.
We said
girl math is not applying here, okay?
Use girl math. How dare you?
No, film philosopher team math says that in the first two movies, there was more kills than Bride of Chucky. We've also figured that out because of Scream 2, that there was more kills in Scream 2 than there was.
Okay, here's how we're going to fix this movie.
Power of 2.
We're going to just say what we think all the way out, and then there's no gray areas anymore.
Here.
All right. Yeah.
There we go.
It worked.
All right, you know what? We're going to do a speed round, and then we're going to wrap this up.
Speed! No stories!
So, I'm going to give you a name of a movie,
uh-huh,
and you're going to tell me if the kill count is above 10 or below 10.
Okay. Do we get the year of the movie?
No.
Well, this is going to go real
poorly. If it counts.
It always counts.
It does!
All right, here we go.
People did not care in the 70s.
The Purge Anarchy.
Okay, are there fake movies in here?
No, that's one of the more recent ones.
Because it's anarchy. How are they bad anarchists?
Us in 2019.
How high?
Because it was
is
multiple
it above
people
10
replied.
Or
oh, yeah,
lower
it was
than 10.
Above
higher,
10.
Yeah. Hooray!
There you go. Sinister.
Lower 10? Hooray!
Yay!
And The Witch.
I have not seen this film.
Wait, is that Vavitch?
Yes.
Yeah, that... I think it was lower?
Lower.
There you go!
Yay!
You guys made it through.
Wait, is it actually called The Witch?
It's actually called The Witch.
Oh, I thought it was two V's.
It makes it look like that because that's how people wrote back in the earlier days of like colonialism.
I've been calling it The Witch for the longest time.
You've been getting it wrong.
Don't talk to people about it. I'm just like, why am I seeing this The Witch movie?
You really got to stop saying it like that.
That's how they wrote it.
Well, and that was a great time with the game. Yeah, this was interesting seeing you guys struggle here. But
you only got two wrong.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
yeah. Miraculously, oddly enough, I'm surprised. I got to make my games a little more difficult.
But, well, that's not the problem.
It could be. So with that said, we're going to go ahead and transition over into our conversation of the evening. And that is our take on Zach Cregger's recent horror film, and that is Weapons. This movie has been talked about quite a bit as there's been a lot of speculation behind what the movie's going to be about, what the whole, you know, ultimately when you involve children in movies, and ultimately that's the reason why managing intern manager Amy isn't here, most people get turned off almost instantly. However, in the scope of this, we have no scruples in this, and we saw the movie.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about it. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
When all but one child from the same class mysteriously vanish on the same night at the exact same time, a community is left questioning who or what is behind their disappearance.
Written, co-produced, and directed by Zach Cregger, the film stars Josh Brolin, Julia Gardner, Alden Ehrenreich, Austin Abrams, Carrie Christopher, with Benedict Wan and Amy Madigan. A couple key pieces about the film. Deadline Hollywood reported that New Line Cinema won the spec script in a bidding war against, allegedly, Universal, Netflix, and Sony TriStar. The Hollywood Reporter detailed that parts of the deal were an eight-figure sum of money, a guaranteed green light for production, final cut privileges for Cregger, interest in a back-end lot, and most importantly in the closing deal, the guarantee of a theatrical release. Insiders called it an unprecedented deal in modern times and is compared to M. Night Shyamalan's deals post such as The Sixth Sense from 1999. So there was a lot of work on the back end for this movie just to hit the silver screen. And the fact that at the end of all that, we got this movie, it really kind of says a lot about, I guess, the faith that the people had in, you know, yeah. But either way, they won it. There was money involved and it was at the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
It made it out.
It did. Another key piece of information, Zach Cregger cites Magnolia as its inspiration, with him looking to make Weapons a quote unquote unapologetic epic in the vein of that film. Quote, I love that movie. I love that kind of bold scale. It gave me permission when I was writing this to shoot for the stars and make it an epic. I wanted a horror epic, and so I tried to do just that. Last piece of information we got. Just like with Barbarian, Zach Cregger claimed that he came up with the premise first and worked out the rest of the plot later. Quote, I didn't have an outline. I didn't know what it was about. It was just like, let the movie show itself to me. I want to watch the movie as I'm writing it.
You know, that's very telling, but also really impressive.
Yeah.
Because you got a lot farther than I would have. Like, I'd imagine this movie would be wildly worse.
Like, I said the same thing when it came to, like, some of my essays for high school. So I'm like, hey, how about it?
Why don't you tell me who Genghis Khan is, essay?
Wow, wait, okay. The way you said that, I'm like, are you speaking to a Mexican child? Or are you just
like, we're talking about school, dang it.
Yeah, there's those kids. In they have, as much as they're going away, they have those in school. Oh my God. Oh, wow. So we are going to be talking about some of the more unique plots of this. So it's not going to be, we're not going to do full spoilers. You know what? We're going to talk about spoilers. I don't care.
Just because that was just a simple pivot.
Yeah, because it's like the way that movie ends, we got to talk about that.
Yeah.
And there's really no way to kind of gingerly step around it.
Yeah, it'd be all of us being like, blah, 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 and then just coming up to the ending where it's like...
Because I feel like when you come to the end of this movie, it really does play a heavy part in like how you're going to view the movie in the end.
Yeah.
It plays such a heavy emphasis on like recognizing the full scope of what they were trying to do without intentionally doing it beforehand. And we'll, I know it sounds pretty vague, listeners, but we're going to get into the nitty gritty as we dive in. So as we stated, few spoilers, well, full spoilers, but let's talk experiences, first experiences. So expectations, actually. Sorry. Yeah. Expectations going into this. Let me start with Sarah. But just to keep in mind, this is one of the first major horror films of the year. I know we had a couple at the beginning of the year, but as we're coming into fall, this is kind of ushering in that whole season of spookiness. So as far as your expectations, what were some of the things you had in mind?
So originally when like the first like teasers and trailers dropped, I was like, oh, like I was a bit hesitant to go see this. Not out of a, like not having faith in the movie or the story, but in a, if I go to the theaters to see this, like good natured, I'm going to get scared and probably need to leave the theaters because I, in my journey of horror, I have not like delved fully into, you know, movies that are centered around horror with children and the children having to play some part of it. I also have a thing with, because part of their promotion, they were putting out where you could watch the camera footage from like the Ring doorbells and security cameras of the children when they were leaving. And I went, nope, I'm good. I don't want to see it. So my expectations were a little bit high and being like, they were well-natured of the trailers are showing me something good and I'm expecting it to be good and I'm expecting to kind of leave a little bit traumatized. What about you?
Let's see. I was actually really excited because I was like, this looks really interesting and kind of like creepy, especially with like the kids like running in that very
T-pose. It was a T-pose.
Yeah, like it's slightly the, lower
let's get it T-pose. Right. It's the Naruto run. Let's be honest.
It's the Naruto run with T-posing.
Like, yeah.
No, it's just the Naruto run.
That's more of a lean forward.
Like the lean, oh my God, did you not see where they were going? They were leaning forward.
They were forward. They were but like they had birds. Their arms out like this. Like
that's the, literally the Naruto pose.
But they're standing up a little bit straight.
When they invaded Area 51, they were leaning forward a lot more than
the
that.
I mean, for the few that
actually did get in there. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was really intrigued on what a movie with those kids running called Weapons was even about.
Yeah.
I was like, that seems like a real hodgepodge of things, but I'm very interested to see on like how this all gels together. So, you know, mild excitement. What about you, Eddie?
I was kind of intrigued at first with the promotional information, the stuff that they had started doing regarding marketing. When the trailer dropped, it was super interesting. I thought it was going to be one of those ones that, because it takes you for the from the perspective of, you know, based on a true story or something like that. You hear that in the trailer, and you're like, okay.
But did they say based on a true story?
They say in the beginning of the movie too.
Oh yeah, she did say that. Man, I just like glaze over things. I'm like, well, that's obviously a lie. Yeah, continue.
Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, no, but it's one of those things where you're like, okay, they're going to take that approach. They're taking some kind of liberty with a story that's already existing somewhere else, much to the same, you know, echo of like what we used to do as kids. We would tell stories, stuff like that. So it's kind of taking from maybe that place in the space of horror. I didn't really know how I was going to enjoy watching it just because Julia Garner, the first thing we had seen her in this year was The Wolfman. Mm-hmm. And that was okay. I mean, it wasn't the greatest thing. And maybe she just wasn't right for the role or maybe she didn't have enough time to prep. I don't know. But that really kind of left a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth when it comes to her performances. We did see her in Fantastic Four. She's Silver Surfer.
Right, I keep forgetting that.
Wow.
I constantly have Spencer, to relearn that one fact.
Two words, ginkgo biloba.
What?
What?
Ginkgo biloba, the medication that people take for memory?
I've never heard of this.
How have you not have heard of ginkgo biloba? They would talk about it on like infomercials.
What the heck were you watching?
Regular TV.
It sounds like a character from
Something. I was expecting some sort of Star Wars reference.
Hold the phone.
Have you both never heard of Ginkgo biloba?
No.
It's literally everywhere.
What?
This is like, no? Yeah, there's literally a joke about it in an episode of King of the Hill we just saw not too long ago. That you talked about, Sarah, where John Redcorn was coming into the house. He goes, "Oh, I have some ginkgo biloba for Nancy."
I do not remember that. Wow. I feel like I'm being kind of
the episode where Peggy finds out about John Redcorn and Nancy. And in the very first episode, in the beginning of it, he walks over and he goes, "Oh, I have some new special herbs for Nancy for her headaches. It's ginkgo biloba."
Okay. Wow. Not gonna lie.
I'm not too concerned about because you know that generation. But you, however,
okay, it's not my fault that the trend of like fault. Start digging in your butt twin is started. The fact that we were in a philosopher group Instagram DM and you sent me that meme and I went, not you too.
I've never heard of ginkgo biloba.
Same here.
It's literally everywhere. Like there's meme. Either way, it's amazing that you guys haven't
heard
about
this. Sounds like something Jar Jar would have said.
Jar Jar.
Yeah.
Are you guys on first name basis like that? Me and Jar Jar. We're going to go hit the barber shop. Me and Jar Jar. You know.
You know who I was talking about? I didn't have to say Binks.
The only other person who I know who does that is Amy, and I've already learned to just push that off in my head. But she goes, "Oh yeah, me and Brad. Who the heck is Brad? You're Brad Pitt? Like what? You know Brad Pitt? No, but I'm just saying, you know, Brad did really great in this." I'm like, no, you call him by his first and last name because you don't know the man. It's like that whole me and Jar Jar. Yeah, just
hey, can you say the prescription one more time?
The what?
The prescription one more time.
Ginkgo biloba. Is that? Are you guys like, are you guys on drugs? Like what's going on?
We're certainly not on ginkgo biloba.
No.
Obviously. God, someone who forgets a character in a movie we just saw a couple weeks ago and then you're just.
She was silver.
She was in the credits. We reviewed the episode. We said her name in the credits. We mentioned her.
Yeah, I forgot that.
Yeah.
Because like...
Ginkgo biloba, my friend.
Below my expectations.
What's the other actress's name? Gardner.
Julia Gardner?
Yeah. Her. I keep getting her.
Oh, wait. I just said the name of the same person.
I'm like, wait, what? That's the name of the actress. Are you sure you're not
Jennifer
on something?
Jennifer, yeah.
Wait, no. Are you sure you're not huffing something over there? There's not like something.
Listen, we're all in the same place, so we're all huffing.
Yeah, but you guys are on that side of the table, and I'm getting worried about whatever's
it's
happening.
It's not my fault that there's a division between us.
I think it's not for a good reason. Whatever it is that's going on over there. See, that kind of thing happens over there.
This is real ginkgo biloba, Dave.
Yeah, no kidding. Ginkgo biloba. Oh my gosh. Okay, so anyway, the heck? So regarding the episode or the expectations, I've totally lost my train of thought. Regarding the expectations, like I was hoping to see her do something else, something a little bit more, you know, unique to her liking, something that's a little bit more capable in her wheelhouse. And then on top of that, you got Josh Brolin, you got Benedict Wong, you know, there's a lot of memorable faces, even what's his name? Oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank on his name. The dude from Alden Ehrenreich, guy from Solo.
He played the
police officer in the movie.
That was the same guy?
Yeah.
It has been that
long. We've forgotten about him that long that literally I looked at him, and I'll talk about when we go into acting, but I looked at him and I was just like, huh, you seem familiar. And then literally I looked at my phone. I'm like, you're so, I'll hold my opinion, but
He was also, I don't think you saw it. Never mind.
Okay.
You didn't see Ironheart, did you?
No.
He was Ezekiel Stane.
Oh, that's why he was also familiar.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there was a refresher if I had been paying attention.
Yeah. It's a great show highlighting, you know, black actors.
Oh, don't get on my case. It's Disney's fault.
That's a whole new conversation.
Yeah, that's a whole different conversation there, buddy. So honestly, like with all the people that were going to be in it, I was hoping that maybe she just needed a bigger cast. Maybe she just needed a bigger ensemble. She is kind of one of the focuses of the film to what my knowledge was with the trailer. So I was hoping that she could carry this and do a good job with everyone else doing part of that lifting. So, but yeah, we all got a chance to see the film, got out of it. First impressions right outside the gate. Let's start with Spencer. Oh, and let's hope he remembers what he says.
Shut up.
You're the one who's forgetting.
Whatever.
Ginkgo biloba.
Ginkgo biloba, you're so.
That's the name of the new whale.
That's the what?
It's the name of the new whale exhibit.
Ginkgo biloba? What whale exhibit? What are you guys talking about? Are you guys okay?
This is so stupid.
See, here's the bad part of this. What? Both of you are asthmatic and laughing like crazy. All you're going to hear on the episode is someone's like, oh, that was great, sir.
Okay, yeah. Coming out of the theater, I was perplexed.
No old people fell this time, by the way, on my end. So, because we talked about this last time.
Yeah, that's a real positive for
sure. Yeah, it was really great. Really great.
This is a weird movie because, like, if you had cut off, like, maybe 5-ish or 10-ish minutes before the actual end of the movie, I'd have been like, oh, man, this is going really well. And then the actual ending, I'm like, why does it feel like some accountant was like, you're spending too much money, end it here. Like, it just kind of like didn't stick the landing. And I'm like, you got to stick the landing, especially when you're like, that's the last thing you're going to see.
With so much high stakes. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. What were your impressions?
Okay. I'm going to preface this with, I'm sorry to my friends who I was like, yeah, it's going to be great.
That really sets the tone.
I got a DM from a dude. I told him and one of my friends, because they both go in the same community college. I'm like, yeah, it's great. Like, I've been hearing great things about it. The trailers are awesome. Like, the posters, like it's going to be great. I got a DM back when I woke up, like, at 6 a.m. Like, the person messaged me at 6 a.m. And they just went, what did I watch? It was a movie. So my first impression when I left the theater was, it was a movie.
That's not great.
They had so much going, and literally, I agree, they could have cut it up like 10 to 5 minutes or 5 to 10 minutes before that ending, and I was just like, they're gonna continue in some way. This is a great sense of the unknown. But no. The likelihood of my friendship with said people being sustained.
Okay, don't tell me weapons destroyed your friendship.
There was an unfollow that occurred.
There was an unfollow. There was a, we're going to ask you to need to leave the server. Oof. What do you think about after first impressions?
Right outside the gate, are you okay?
She thought about Ginkgo biloba.
I knew it. I swear to God, I'm not even going to give this episode a title. I'm just going to call it Ginkgo biloba. What? First impressions right outside the gate. Honestly, I have to agree with Spencer. I feel like this movie really throws a change up at the last part of this film. I thought everything leading up to it was good in the small amounts of humor that it interjected here or there, in the overall aesthetic of horror. And then we get the last act, and it's like, are we still watching the same movie? Mm-hmm. And we'll get into what that means, because we're going to have to as we dive a little deeper. But let's go ahead and move into some of the performers in this film. Obviously, we mentioned Julia Garner. I have to say, I actually really liked her in this role. I thought she was good. I mean, maybe it's the helpless petite teacher aesthetic that she kind of embodied. The fact that this was a teacher who could afford a home as nice as hers.
Wildly unbelievable.
I was a teacher. There's no way on that, you know, pay rate that you can get anything outside of an apartment. I'm surprised there were no cats in that that apartment, because
you're really assigning a lot to this lady.
I'm just saying, the fact is like, there's a lot of that she's not really hitting the marker on. I'm a teacher. I'm doing what Amy does when it comes to military movies, and I'm like, here's the thing, like, first off, if you're going to be that late into your classroom, when I was a teacher, I was there like almost an hour early just to set up everything that was not going to be done for the whole day. It would always change up once the with the curriculum and everything. That woman walked in after like everybody else went to their classroom. Like, okay, was she drinking before she went into the office? I'm just saying. There's a lot of things regarding the teacher aesthetic that they didn't really kind of hit the mark on. Because the only way, honestly, that she probably got a home, had a nice car, you know, all these things, and wasn't freaking out to the nth degree that she didn't, like, I would, even though all those kids went missing, I would be more worried about not having a job. Like, truly. Like, the kids are gone. All right, that's bad. I'm sorry, but I need to work. And I need, you know, put me in another district, put me in another school. I need to keep going. I will fight. There's a union. I'm a part of a union. Like, that union probably should have came in clutch.
Yeah.
But she didn't do that to that extent. She was like, please just let me work. Please just let me work when she was talking to the principal. But it wasn't a move me to another district, which, yeah. She kept acting like she wanted to just work specifically at that school. That I was just like,
Yeah. So, but aside all those little things, I think she was really good as kind of the spiraling person who is trying to make sense of it all. I think she did really well in that particular kind of just like a fly in a spider's web kind of mentality, just lost in the chaos of everything else and just trying to make sense of whatever she could. Opposite her, not really opposite, but as far as one of her cohorts, Benedict Wong was fantastic. Can we just talk about how wonderful Benedict Wong was?
Yes.
I would believe him 100% that he was a school administrator. He had the vibe, like the way he would. And again, I'm just reflecting back on my own professional career here. The fact that he was in there and he did the whole nice but persistent, like, I hear what you're saying, but unfortunately we are going to need, like, and he delivered that perfectly. I would have listened to him. I'm like, okay, like, I'm not a part of this family, but I'll bring whatever you need. He did great. And everything about his role was just on the money. Was there anybody you guys wanted to highlight? I know there's more people, but I want to give you guys a chance.
I will go, even though this person's kind of problematic to the ending thing, I'm going to go with Amy Madigan as Gladys. She was interesting because, like, she showed up and I'm like, what the heck is this woman's deal? And, like, you're just kind of wondering at that through the whole movie. And through most of it, she, like, had a very interesting performance and, like, kind of built with the movie's intrigue.
Yeah.
For most of it, until the movie kind of backstabbed her.
Yeah, I really do have to say the build up to her final, like, to her full reveal at the point of in the movie, like, where she's like, oh, this is who she is, this is how she gets ushered into our story. I really love the build up to it. I love how everybody was seeing glimpses of something about her, and it was this obscure clownish type of person entity. Or entity that just seemed to always show up or be in specific spaces where it just people were already on edge. I loved it. I thought it was great. Until the ending.
Yeah, until the ending. Her design as a character, she gave me very, like, I'm sorry for this. Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, season 2. She gave me Leslie vibes, and I'm just like, okay. And then a couple of my friends were like, she looks like Chapel Roan. I'm like, never mind. Go away. I'm good. Like, between her and then Alden Eric, the person who played Paul, the one of the cops.
Alden Ehrenreich.
Yes. So for Alden, his portrayal of Paul, I appreciate it. But also throughout the entire movie, every time I looked at him, I'm like, if the people behind Stranger Things want to do like a tiny, like, before the kids, like, and it's focused on the parents, he would make a good young Hopper. Like, okay, we had a misstep with Solo and him being Han Solo, but hear me out. He could probably be a young Hopper.
Good. I really liked his ability to kind of create that, like, because if there's one thing that we know about cops right now, is they're very like on edge all the time, even without the whole situation of all these 17 kids going missing. The fact is like, I'm pretty sure he would have still been jittery even if all that stuff wasn't happening. Mm-hmm. Like, he seemed like he embodied the whole stereotype of like a trigger happy cop. Someone who's just looking for a reason.
He swung hard. And then he's like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But if we don't talk about this, you're good. And I'm like,
Yeah. Going back really quick to Amy Madigan. There's information out about as far as like her character makeup. And we'll get into kind of the character itself in a little bit. But I do want to mention this. And I don't know if this is going to sway your guys' perspective on the character itself. But Zach Cregger revealed that he told Amy Madigan she could pick between two different options for the Gladys backstory. He said, I was like, you can pick one of these two. Option one, Gladys was just a normal person using dark magic to cure her disease. She has to adopt this methodology that she uses out of a place of emergency to keep herself alive. I won't say any more than that. Option two, Gladys was a non-human creature who was using her bizarre makeup and wig in a poor attempt to mimic humans. That's an interesting way to think about it. I like that a lot. So that's what he ultimately told her. Mm. I don't know which one he went with or which one she went with. And that's kind of a problem for me, as we'll talk about in the story, because she ultimately becomes this kind of a MacGuffin in the movie. Yeah. But I wanted to mention that as far as like where she was building from as far as her character. But you said Alden Ehrenreich.
Yeah, we're missing Josh Brolin and him as a dad.
Well, yeah, Josh Brolin, I think, brings as Archer, brings something unique to the whole fray. He does embody that grieving dad who is just wanting answers. And I think the one biggest thing that usually you miss out in most of these types of movies is how much things like this affect your work, like affect the day to day. And I do appreciate that they incorporated, like, while he was grieving and still trying to juggle working and, you know, processing the absence of his son, he got things wrong. He got things like didn't do things right. Like, we have all these other people who were like, oh, all these other movies were, the person is still functioning. They might be grieving, but everything else is still working well behind them. They're magically finding some sense of cognizance to be able to do whatever they need to do their job well. And it's like, that's not how it works. and the fact is, in this, I like that they did that. And they showed him like actually realizing it and taking ownership of it. I thought that was really cool. And then, of course, from the perspective that he takes, where he has no answers. So either A, he's going to target the one woman who still seems to be there but doesn't have any answers herself, or B, he's going to find the answers himself, like, without a doubt. And usually in these types of situations, the most wildest speculations tend to lean towards the right answer. In this particular case, he kind of comes to an understanding with that. And I do appreciate that. Let's see. Is there anybody else that we need to highlight? No. but that does kind of, using Archer and whatnot, that does bring us to one of the younger performers in the film, and that's the little boy who plays Alex, which, if I could find his name.
Gary Christopher.
I gotta admit, for him being a young actor and being able to embody so many, like, for lack of a better term, big emotions and big feelings, and put that behind like a dam where your job is to mimic the almost breaking of that dam every day without letting the floodgates go. This kid did it. Mm-hmm. Like, every time he was in a school setting, every time he was like walking by himself down the street, every time he interacted with some adult or whatever, there was always this instance where he was just so on the nose of like, I would love to tell you, but if I do, my parents will die. Mm. Plain and simple. This kid did it. And I'm actually anxious to see what other things he's done. and kind of where his trajectory is heading. He's actually listed as supposed to be in the next Spider-Noir movie.
Ooh. Oh, right. I forgot about that one.
Yeah. And then it looks like he's also in the new live action Lanterns series, Green Lantern series. So that'll be interesting. Yeah, but with that said, with Alex being one of the kids, the only kid that actually wasn't, you know, missing, let's kind of transition over to the story and talk about that. Now, the majority of the film kind of follows the narrative of like a chapter story, which is very interesting. Not many people do that. And when they do it, there's really kind of a coin toss for it. Mm. You either stunt the momentum of a film, or you're able to compartmentalize the entire tale of that particular chapter and create a transition for the next one. Mm. I don't know if this did that to the fullest extent. I think there were some parts where the momentum that stopped really kind of just halted the whole movie. I don't know. What do you guys think? Because that's a very unique design choice.
It's so funny because like once I finally figured out, oh, this is what we're doing, I was like, man, this reminds me of like those old Animorph books where they would switch perspectives between different people. And I was like, I hated that though, because like something exciting was happening. And then we're finding like what Bob is doing over here. And it's like, I like, it is interesting. And I think it would work better if we didn't leave people on cliffhangers all the dang time.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's what really kind of like breaks your momentum, because like you've got one person, you're ending with one person who's doing something like really exciting and intense.
Yeah.
And then you're flipping to someone who's just like going about their day and you're getting into their story, which is kind of hard.
I do. What are your thoughts? Sorry, I didn't want to pass you up, but what are your thoughts on that, Sarah?
So I liked it, but I fully agree on the cliffhanger thing, because when it comes to if you were following a character for a while and then you leave them on like an absolute cliffhanger and then you switch to someone just going through their daily life, you will kind of, while going through the second person's point of view, will lose interest of kind of remembering, oh yeah, that's where we left this person. Mm-hmm. So like I appreciate that type of like storytelling when it's used properly, but it's not a necessary for like every single thing to make sure that your viewers are like, okay, so if I like, you'll have people slightly tune out if you switch to a different perspective, and they'll wait until you get to basically back to that point that they'll be like, oh yeah, I don't really remember this. I was mainly in it for this person.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, I brought the whole thing to the table, but like it's a choice that like Quentin Tarantino is really well known for doing that. You know, it's one of those things where even before Quentin Tarantino, like a lot of samurai films or even you know, Asian cinema, they incorporate the chapter play because most of their stories are epics. You know, they create that because it's a part of the journey, the odyssey, if you will, of those particular.
I like the odyssey. Never mind. It's not going into it. I just said, huh? I liked it. Continue on your thought.
By Homer.
Yeah.
Dope.
Ginkgo biloba. But again, those are people like, you know, Quentin Tarantino did it. Someone else had recently done it as well. I forget offhand. I think they even did it in Magnolia. But like, there are a lot of people who have used it as a methodology for how they deliver the story. In certain instances, I wish that there was more. I'm sorry, I wish there were less chapters. Like, I don't think we needed so many perspectives in this particular film to convey exactly what I was trying to do. Like, I think the story was good. I think having like James's story, which is the meth head. Mm. I don't know if that one was fully necessary. I feel like there could have been a little bit more of a butting up with the story of Justine and Paul. Like, I feel like that could have been a little bit more like cohesively told. I don't know. Like, I'm torn because as much as I love a film that tries to do something unique and does it in a distinctive way where filmmaker where moviegoers are like, oh, that's different. You know, I like seeing those types of things, but it has to be done well. Like it has to be executed on like well. And I could probably give this like a 75%, like as far as like, or an 80% as far as its execution.
Well, I did actually like how parts of Justine and Paul did work in this like chapter, like preview, because like when you're in Justine's part and like Paul comes in, you're like, okay, he's just like kind of this weird cop guy, whatever. And then you switch to his and you're like, oh, he's a jerk too, and a liar. And like, I kind of did like that, like learning that later on. I thought that was kind of good though.
Yeah. Which another aspect that I really actually appreciated was, and it, I feel like it was done purposefully. It had to have been done purposefully, but the miscommunication of like certain details from each chapter to the next, how certain things were more focused on in one chapter versus the other chapter. Like for instance, the call that Justine makes to Marcus about like Alex and what's going on and he needs to get checked or whatever. And you're like, okay, just sound like a simple call. And then you go to Marcus's story and it's like, it's a much more detailed conversation. Like, or you go back to Justine where she goes to Alex's house and she doesn't have that difficult of a time with the gate. But then James goes to the house and he has to fight the gate just to get in.
Yeah.
It's like you realize that nobody can be trusted. Like nobody's word can be taken seriously as a means of like understanding the full story. So it's kind of interesting in the choice for doing that. Cause I thought it was fun. I was like one of those things where you spent the time watching movie and you're like, oh, that's different. That's not the way it was in this one. Or, oh, that's unique. That's not the way it was in this one.
See, when I was watching the movie, I couldn't figure out if that's what they were trying to go for, or if they were just trying to say, well, James is a meth head, so he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, I was
very confused about that.
That does actually transition over to like another aspect of the movie that I really want to talk about, and the humor.
Yes.
So the director himself, he's no stranger. Zach Gregor's no stranger to, you know, comedic things. Like he did The Whitest Kids You Know from way back, like back in the early 2010s. I don't know if you recall that one.
Remember it existed, yes.
I do remember it existed as well. It was a comedy show. I forget what it was on.
It was on Ginkgo Biloba.
probably, you know. It happens. But it was like, it ran for like 5 years. Sketch comedy involving five friends. But the fact is like, he's no stranger to comedy. And so now he's doing his foray into horror, which, I mean, we're seeing a lot of people who were comedic, you know, entities in the past take a step towards horror and really kind of create new things for the genre.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the most iconic one out of all of them is Jordan Peele as of late, you know, but the fact that he was able to create what he did in the first like three quarters of the movie really speaks highly to his ability of like writing. I mean, cause he wrote it, you know, writing and directing the whole story. But I don't know if so this does kind of bring us to that section that we were talking about with the ending.
Yeah.
Because again, the first three quarters of the movie, absolutely great. Like I could look over a lot of the chapter stuff. I could look over all that other stuff because the story was engaging. It was unique. Mm-hmm. It definitely brought something to the table that we really hadn't seen in a long while, where the threat and the risk and the overall stakes were a lot higher than just, you know, oh my God, you know, my wife is missing, or oh my gosh, you know, they have a curse on my son or whatever. It's children in general, like multiple children. And you have a situation where these children are missing and you don't know if they're alive or they're dead or what's going on. It creates that kind of ambiguous, you know, destination of where they're going. And then, and so the first three quarters of the movie does that. And then we get to the last part of the movie. And I think the effort to create more hilarity kind of took a lot of people out of the movie, truth be told, than it did really kind of benefiting the film. And I've seen, to be honest, I've seen so many conversations and reviews, and even people who are talking about on social media about that ending as to, you know, some of them who are a little bit more like, yeah, if you didn't get the ending, then, you know, this movie just isn't for you. You know, it's supposed to be funny. That's the way he is. It's, you know, this guy's, he's a comedy guy. You know, this is what he does and this is that. But then you get the other side of it. Like, you've created this, like, formula that we followed for the first three quarters of the movie. And then it all gets thrown out in that last act. Mm. And it's like, how do you make it make sense? Like, what do you think?
I think if he was going to do that, he needed to make it just like more of a punch and then go back to it. Like, you know, the whole thing happens and like, well, we didn't actually even explain what happens.
No, we didn't.
So basically at the end of the movie, Alex basically is able to wield a small amount of power of magic and is able to sick the kids that Gladys has taken at this point back on Gladys.
Yeah.
And the kids just start screaming, yeah, going after her.
What ultimately ensues is these 17 children running through the house to find and catch Gladys. And Gladys is running around in a very thin negligee, like that, with her thin wispy hair, running like a very old person in the wee hours of the morning, as people are barely waking up and kind of starting their day. And there's no music playing. It is just...
No, there is actually. There is... I talked to a couple of people, and the person I didn't upset, she said that there was music under it, but the thing is, in the theater, and we had this experience too, of people were laughing during that scene, and you couldn't hear it. All you saw was just her running and the 17 children. And it's also just for that, you have the, because besides Gladys as a character, because how we meet her and how like we fully meet her is for Alex's chapter. He comes home from school and his parents tell him that his aunt Gladys is going to come stay with them, that she's sick. He's like, but I don't like her. I don't really know her. And it's kind of like up in the air on how they actually know Gladys. And that's where it kind of plays into what you said about the director giving the actress the option between either her being an out, like not human, or being her being a human using magic. So basically, she comes in and she's like, I'm sick. And she has this tree, and it was established in Marcus's that something regarding this tree has a magical component. And that if she uses one of the sticks and she gets something from them and a piece of their hair or a piece of someone else's hair, she can basically sick people and other people. Well, the tree in itself is a MacGuffin. It frustrates my mind.
So what's your point?
My point is having the component of the tree and snapping it for the all the children to be running at her. As the ending is, because I'm going to pass it to you because like, it's just a frustration.
Just in case you don't know, so the term MacGuffin is used quite often when in talking about movies. You may have heard of it in certain aspects, like the MacGuffin what's that movie with Orson Welles? Citizen Kane. The MacGuffin is Rosebud, which... either it's a sled or if it's meaning other things, like the intentionality behind the word is the MacGuffin. You look at the Maltese Falcon. The Maltese Falcon is essentially the MacGuffin in that. The more famous one as of late, which is in Pulp Fiction, the briefcase, it's a MacGuffin. The whole purpose around it, the whole focus on it is kind of not really explained. You just know there's a sense of importance with that briefcase. So we come to this, and not only is the tree a MacGuffin, but the whole character of Gladys is essentially a MacGuffin because, again, as I stated, there is a sense of like character building, but it's not explained at all in the movie. There's no backstory to her. There's no information. There's not even a hint as to the power behind the tree, like the little bush that she has in her room.
It's just there.
Yeah, and she uses it, but it's not really stated like if it has to be that or it can be another.
Watered.
Like you don't know if the power is hers or if the power is in the tree. Like the whole kind of mentality behind that is a MacGuffin. So a MacGuffin is essentially things that don't really have an explanation. They don't really have a purpose in the movie other than to exist to drive the plot forward.
Yeah.
That's essentially a MacGuffin. Gladys is essentially the MacGuffin in this movie because we don't know what her purpose is. We don't know why she's stealing children or she has, you know, Alex's parents in this catatonic state. There's no understanding of it.
Well, she like implies something, but she doesn't fully. That's my main problem with Gladys is she doesn't explain enough of a thing. She starts to it, but then doesn't finish because like it. What she says like at the beginning is like, "Oh, I thought your parents could make me better." She's talking to Alex.
Yeah,
I thought your parents could make me better, but I think I need someone younger. But
I
like,
need something else.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, so like. Why children? Why do you need children? What is it about children? Yeah. Why do you need so many children?
like, what was the meaning and driving force behind it? And the other thing is, like, and this is part of my complaint, throughout the movie and throughout the chapters, there's been, like, it was really a red herring. There was a red herring on maybe there's something, like, something somewhere of a disease, because disease or parasite. Because in the first one with Justine, she's teaching the kids, for Justine's and Alex's, on the board, she's teaching them about tapeworms and parasites. There's a discussion about diseases and like a couple of them. And then we have Archer's dream where he's running after his kid, Matthew, right? Probably Matthew.
Matthew.
And he gets to this like mirror version of his house and it's the time on a gun. And it's flashing. And okay, and this is where it plays into my complaint. Because also, they advertise on their poster the gun, a can of soup, I think a Coke can, and then like, I think it was either a kid or something.
Yeah.
And for me, being with Final Destination, which is not really a good example, but also Final Destination, The Monkey, with other movies this year, I'm like, okay, something with this movie, these are going to have like a big...
That one?
That one, exactly. And it has a tree. It has, is that soup? I think
it's
soup.
Yeah, soup.
Soup, I can't see. The bell?
I don't see a gun.
It's a bell.
There was one that I thought was red.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like, whatchamacallit?
I'm not seeing a bell.
A bell?
I mean, gun. I'm not seeing the gun.
You're not seeing the gun or the can of soup or the Coke can. There was something that looked like that. It was either exactly that. Either way, their promotion, I looked at it and I was just like, okay, like for the poster, it's like, okay, maybe it's like somehow we're going to have deaths or travesties revolving around that.
And I would like to remind you, at the beginning of this movie, the narrator said a lot of people died during this story.
Yeah. And not going to lie, not a lot, like a couple people, like that. Okay.
It was like four, I
like
believe. Four,
like, so people did die. It
was five.
Five? Okay.
One, two.
So you have gets hit. You have
so you have Benedict Wong and his partner. Mm. You have the Paul and James.
Four. Yeah.
Gladys.
And then Gladys.
Oh right, Gladys. She counts.
Yeah, she counts. Like, and that's where my issue lies, is because also they...
By the way, you didn't finish talking about Archer's dream.
No, I said, oh, sorry.
So what ends up happening, Josh Brolin has this dream, this weird kind of out-of-body experience where he sees his son actually leave the house in a dream, follows him to a mirrored version of his house, but when he looks up, he sees like this huge MK like assault rifle with a digital display of the time 2:17 flashing on it in front of like flickering, you know, lightning going on behind in the clouds. None of it makes sense, but it's interesting how he's the one who comes up with the name weapons, like they were used as weaponized missiles because of the trajectory that they were following when they left the house. Now, again, the mentality behind what is truth and what isn't, it's all still kind of really hard to believe what is what. But again, coming back to whatever it is we were talking about in the beginning before we started talking about...
We were talking about Gladys and basically being her a MacGuffin and the tree. And I was bringing up my complaint about that throughout the other chapters. We had... she appeared. But we had like the red herrings.
She appears in every single one of them.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. In the previous chapters before Alex, she's basically throughout all of them in some way of like basically haunting and having a part of it. My complaint was that you had sections where it was a red herring and then a consistent red herring where you're like, okay, maybe it's a disease. Like, and that's the other thing. For first half of the movie, before we get to the very ending, it gave me the stakes of Stranger Things, but multiplied of them trying to find Will, but centered on that. And then at the very end, they went, whoops. Like,
yeah, the way the ending kind of, it goes from being a really great horror narrative of the story to the first Spy Kids movie at the very end where all the kids attack the bad guy. And mind you, if there was music underneath it, it definitely wasn't heard. I don't know if you heard anything.
I did not.
You know, but the fact is like you create such a strong pivot like that. And A, you're going to have people who don't pivot with you. And that's not their fault. Yeah. Because if you are someone who is coming to see a horror film and you've put yourself in the space to receive this horror movie, and you've had a couple of, like, a lot of horror movies do it. They interject a little bit of humor. They interject a little bit of romance. They interject all these little aspects to make sure that it's not just all this bombardment of, you know, screams and scares and whatnot.
And gore.
You know, every movie, every good horror movie does that. There's a mix. So that was the assumption with this. But then you create this huge pivot from all these, you know, chaotic things and someone literally getting their face peeled with a potato peeler. And then you transition to, you know, the Benny Hill show where it's everyone's like, dun, 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 oh, like it's,
and to add into that, having one of your other people being controlled, having the, oh, he's down. Nope, he's up. And it went on for too long. And I was just like, I sat there and I was just like, what are we doing here?
And that's so interesting. You mentioned that as well. So the other side of this particular interesting conundrum is, as much as the strong pivot from that, but secondly, I don't know how to feel in that apparently Austin Abrams was one of the actors who actually came back during the strikes to finish filming this movie, I believe.
Mm. Oh.
So being kind of a what they call a scab actor.
Mm.
I have to verify that, but let's see. Someone else talk.
Like, he was playing against Josh Brolin in that? They both did that?
Well, I don't know if they both were working during that time, but...
So basically, he came back during the actor's strike or the writer's strike?
Okay,
so he came back during one of the strikes to continue on, which, hey, I mean, if... And that's the weird thing. For that... If it was filming during the strike, but if it was like he came back and was like, let me do something, let me act, that makes me kind of feel like they might have, and I don't want to say that they punished him because he's going to, so same director, Zach Krager is supposed to be doing the new Resident Evil.
Ooh.
And supposedly Austin Abrams is supposed to be in there too, question mark? Like it says it that he's supposed to be in there. Wait, hold up. Austin Abrams was in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark? Hold on.
Yeah.
He was.
As Kreger's revealed during an interview with Entertainment Weekly, he had an entirely different cast for Weapons, but the writer's strike, followed by Pedro Pascal having to back out, led to a full recast.
Oh, Pedro Pascal was a part of that?
Yeah, there was a whole lot of people who were a part of it before these guys. Which, again, I don't know how much that affects your guys's. So along with Pascal, the original cast of Weapons included Brian Tyree Henry, Renate Rensvi, and Austin Abrams. I don't know who Renate Rensvi is. While Kreger's added that he bears no ill will towards anybody, but having to back out, and the movie essentially resetting back to casting, he had high praise for Abrams, the lone name that hung tough with him. I don't know if it was specifically with like the actor's strike or if it was just the writer's strike, but there is a little bit of controversy surrounding that. And as much as it doesn't really affect the overall outcome of the story, the fact is that we support, you know, the rightful, and equal wages for all performers and actors and writers in the industry. So
all artists, because
yeah, absolutely. So, but again, like, I don't know if that weighs in on your perspective of it, but it is something to mention. But in speaking of like that particular role, there was like that particular amount of comedy that was okay. Like when he's throwing them around and he keeps popping back up and all the kind of stuff, like there's actually reports that Zach Kreger has mentioned there was actually more funny things they wanted to do in the movie, but they didn't get a chance to do it.
If it was like, so here's my take on it. I feel that for the movie, if they were like going with that ending, if they sprinkled a little bit of humor, because there's other horror movies where they've done it like successfully, where they still know their footing and what they want to do. And also, I don't mean to be like, if you're like, we start on the movie and then we just go as it is, like you successfully took off the plane and you're soaring through clear skies, and then it felt towards the end, like just the last 5 to 10 minutes, that you're like, okay, landing the plane.
Yeah, Zach Kreger revealed through an interview with the Associated Press that certain scenes that he thought of as quote unquote so funny were to be cut if the jokes in question didn't elicit laughs from test audiences. He said, if the humor is coming from an authentic reaction that a character is having, then it works, Kreger said. There's a lot of jokes that didn't make it into the movie that I thought were going to be so funny. And then we did a test screening and nobody laughed. And I'm like, okay, it's got
to
go.
Okay, so not to cut you off. It depends on where it was placed, one. And two, not even an awkward laugh, because occasionally an awkward laugh in a movie will, like, if it brings some like a little bit of lightheartedness to it or to the situation, but you still move forward, I would understand.
Yeah.
No laughter?
Well, and the thing is, like, here's the thing. You could have created more opportunities to interject that kind of humor throughout the whole thing, and not just like it feels like there was a quota to be met and he ran out of time and just stuffed all of the humor that he wanted to do in that last 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So mind you, it doesn't, like, it is, again, out of a hour and a half, I believe it's like an hour, 28 minute movie. I'm not too sure.
It is 2 hours, 8 minutes.
2 hours, 8 minutes. Okay. So out of a 2 hours and 8 minute movie, the last 15 minutes of it are the part that kind of really changed things up a bit. 15, 20, let's go 20 minutes.
Okay.
The last 20 minutes of it. So, I mean, you're still looking at a good hour 40, hour 50 amount of time of a movie. And here's the big question. Like, was the humor in this movie enough to take you guys out of it at the end of the film?
Okay. I think at the end of the film, it wasn't the humor that took me out. It was like the lack of answers and specificity with like what the heck was happening with this Gladys character. Because like, yeah, the whole running sequence might have gone on for just a few houses too many.
Yeah.
But like, I think,
or the fact that these children were literally just walking through like full doors running through full doors and windows without, you know, any hesitation.
Yeah. That was crazy. It
reminded me of that scene from, there's a scene in one of the Fast and the Furious movies where Charlize Theron just literally starts sending electric cars out of like a high rise parking lot, and they just start raining down on Vin Diesel and all them. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of what it felt like.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I don't think we talked about this movie on the show, but there's another horror movie where the ending of it, like, and I won't name it, like, it was recent, where the things that were being controlled and being possessed spawned, like, all, like, ran in on the specific, like, a specific character and tear them to pieces. I would understand that.
What movie is this?
Evil Dead Rise.
Okay.
So all of them were they, so they basically all came out and like teared apart, and there was good music for that. But the thing is, for this ending, not only the unanswered questions, but for running through the houses and then getting to where you're, so the fear, the part of the scare factor of not only all these 17 kids are missing, but you get to where they catch up the glass, they tear her apart, and it's like, and they snap out of it, and all the kids are just sitting.
Well, they don't technically snap out of it.
Yeah, that's what's really frustrating about the ending. Yeah. It's kind of question mark, where the narrator's like, some of them were back, but then others weren't. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, like some of them started talking like a year ago. And we don't even know when this event took place.
Yeah.
So that could, a year ago could have been like 15, 20 years since the event.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a lot of ambiguity at the end of this movie. And it kind of lends itself to like, okay, we get it. You're like, that's all we're doing. That's it. You're not getting any more. The story ends here. And then 4 days after the movie drops, they announce that they're going to do a prequel.
Yeah, I saw that this morning. I'm like, what?
Wait, is that real?
Yeah.
Sorry. So the thing is, quick thing. When I came back from this movie and I was like, okay, still gathering my thoughts, because I'm like, I need to talk about it. I was just like, it's a movie. And I'm like, I have a weird feeling, and this is no disrespect to Megan, but I have a feeling that they're going to be like, okay, people like this movie. We're going to make a sequel or a prequel. Like, the thing is, I don't even know how to feel. Like,
see that.
I can't believe they just, like trying to pull a Black Widow and just, like, make a movie about a character who's already dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the bigger thing about it all is, like, I don't even think there's enough traction to say she's that memorable that we want a prequel,
or like, that we care for one, that, because like,
yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, sorry. she gets ripped apart and chased through. Benny Hill could have been playing through, like,
but that does bring me to the roundtable question of the evening. If you guys haven't taken a look, this should be a fun one. The roundtable question is, if you were given the director's chair for this movie, how would you have changed the last 10 to 15 minutes of this movie? All right. And let's start with Sarah.
So if I was put in the directorial seat for this film and given the last 10 to 15 minutes, I would go with...
Sarah's like, I would go back an hour and start...
I'd go back an hour and I'd expound more upon the home life of Marcus and his partner, because... that scene was okay. So basically, I'd lead with either Gladys having some sort of connection to something outerworldly, unexplainable, and being, when they get to the kids, and you have the scene with Archer in the basement, and he's trying to shake like his kid out of it, that they have that deadlights gaze, like from It. And that when you get to the end and they snap out of it, they're like, oh, I've seen stuff. Like, I'm like the un, like, because the only logical thing given the previous, like, ending that's set in stone is that either there's something with Gladys where she either feeding off of the kids, or all the kids are in the basement and they're being basically brainwashed or given unexplainable knowledge beyond their control to be later either sent out. Like, it's boring. Would you say that's boring sci-fi if I say that it's like outerworldly and they're like, insanity in that?
Sure. Yeah.
Like, because Stranger Things has a like similar thing of, we don't know why Will was taken, and when he comes back, he isn't really the same. I would have liked if they had like, I would be comfortable with that and feel that ending the story there would have given it kind of the feat to be like, it still has like a good, slightly meaty ending where it's like, okay, there's something out there. And even though it's unexplainable, there's at least something to have a continuation if needed on. Because it gave the vibes for the Sandstone ending that they're going to try to lead somewhere. So that's what I've done.
Okay. Spencer.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to cut the druggy getting up so many times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to do that. That's just a little change. And then play out the movie right up until the point where Alex like snaps his wig. At that point, instead of like, you know, continuing forward, we're going to go back again. We're going to go back and cover like Gladys herself.
We're going to do her chapter?
Yes, we're giving her a chapter. It starts off with her in like some retirement village and like you can tell she's doing really poorly. Her neighbor lady is like this person who is actually related to these people. She's not even related to them, you find out. And she actually just kind of uses her magic to like replace herself in because she's like, oh, maybe if these younger people that nobody cares about because I don't care about them, I can just like take whatever they have and make myself better with whatever the problem is. She's like a disease, or maybe we can tie it back into the parasite thing. But, you know, you do that, you go in, she doesn't work. So then she steals an absurd amount of kids to try to fix that. And then you continue on forward, like probably like pulling like things that were in other chapters into this. And then you launch back into it when you're getting up to it in the movie to where it snaps again and she realizes it and she runs out. But all the kids are already screaming. And since they're kids, they're faster than her. They like take her out in the front lawn right there and then. So like, you know, it's a brief, funny bit, but not as long as the original one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, given that pitch, it would make sense because if she body hopped and she transferred herself into the other person and she's trying to maintain basically the faux person that she took over, she could have been taking all those kids so that she could just body hop and be like, let me get this from this people. Let me
like a Costco.
Sign up for this subscription. I don't want usable tool emails. Face ID.
Okay. I mean, that's a lot of explanation. That's another, 15-20 minutes added to the last part?
Yeah. But yeah, like,
no, I could see it working. Mm-hmm. I could see it working. No, it's like 2:40 at that point.
It's like 2:08. You said 20 minutes.
Oh, the original runtime is 2:08?
Yeah.
Oh, then yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Do you have an adjustment you'd make?
Yeah. I'm trying to think now because I was just like, I got lost in your whole like lore of whatever. Like ultimately what I would probably want to do since I agree with you on the James part, cut down on the throwing around because it got tedious at that point. Like after the first two throws, then turn it into a scuffle and then bring Justine around to do what she does.
Mm.
Like boom, bada bang, like no pun intended, but still, and then we get to the point to where we have we have Archer and that whole thing play out. Have Alex still break the stick. No cut. Go directly to her recognizing that something is wrong. Incorporate more correct music.
Yes.
To the scene to where you don't see the children. You only hear a presence coming, because the idea of that whatever is encapsulating these children at that age that turned Benedict Wong to a complete psycho, like you don't want to see what that looks like on a child because then it's going to be silly. So you don't show that. You just show her running. You show her being chased by some kind of entity, and then you cut down the runtime in half so there's not as many houses. And then when she gets to the yard and she turns, like the camera's almost in that point of view of what's chasing behind her. When she turns, she turns and yells, or she makes some kind of noise that's like this weird ancestral noise or whatever. And then she immediately just poofs into this cloud of almost like spores, where the children run right into that. And they're like, they're looking around and then they kind of snap out of it. And we actually get them to snap out for real. Like they actually come to. Everybody comes to.
Including Alex's parents?
Or what? Including Alex's parents.
Okay.
Everybody comes to. However, we cut to the scene where all the kids go end up going to their parents. They do whatever. But we do have a similar to the Stranger Things thing where the children, when they're in the private of their own home, find themselves having a coughing fit and they end up coughing a little twig with some blonde hair wrapped around it. And it shows like the twig is somehow or some form or fashion, like the hair and the twig is actually alive. And then we cut to the end there and then we wait for the next movie.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Because if you're doing the whole parasite thing, I feel like she is, to figure out a way to give her some kind of direction, she has to be the parasite.
Yeah.
But in what form or fashion? How are we doing this? And like the body jump thing was cool, but I feel like it needs to be something a little bit more like disgusting. Like, like this woman just...
Your idea wasn't gross enough.
Yeah.
It like, wasn't on the level of like...
It needed to be
body
like...
Body horror for substance.
These kids sniffed in what was remaining. It's like... You know, yeah. Either way, the whole idea of it, I don't know. I thought that might have been a little better. The other side of it is like where she comes to and like the whole thing happens the same way. Instead of leaning more towards the horror, just lean completely on the ridiculousness. And, you know, she gets torn apart, whatever, whatever. And the narrator talks at the end and she goes, you know, they found Alex's parents. Unfortunately, blah, 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 the whole thing about that. They did find the potted plant that Gladys had in her room. They took it to a local college to do some studies on it, and they found out it was ginkgo biloba. So, and with that, we bring ourselves to the part of the show where we wrap things up and talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Sarah so she can get her thing together and figure it out.
Well, this movie ain't passing for me.
What?
Well, this movie passes for me.
So basically.
Oh my gosh. So,
she was really leaning into that one.
Besides the ending, it was beautifully shot. The story hooked me in and I wanted to know and see more. But suddenly see more. Basically, I didn't want to see that final like 10 to 15, 20 minutes and that chase. So out of monocles, I'd give it a 4.5. There's room for improvement.
Wow. That's a high score there.
3.5. There's room for improvement.
Like how you just put down a whole monocle.
Just a whole monocle.
At the
just
slightest pushback.
Chop. Spencer.
Sorry. Yeah, this movie does pass because it does have an ending. So there's that. Yeah, so before factoring in the movie, this is a solid 4 of a movie. The rest of the movie is actually pretty good, very entertaining, very engaging. That ending, though, that knocks it down quite a bit. I'm going to have to give it a final score of a 3 because, like, I'm just like, I feel like it doesn't gel together as well as it could.
Yeah.
Because, like, and it's really upsetting, to be perfectly honest.
No,
because it's like, this man is obviously talented. All these actors are talented, and it almost comes together, but then it doesn't quite. And I'm actually quite upset.
Yeah. No, I agree. So you give it a 3, you said.
Yeah.
As far as myself, obviously the movie does pass. The ending does wrap up somewhat of the current story. It doesn't really give us the information that we would love to know when, like, you know, the kids grow up or the kids die from, you know, sniffing old lady stuff. I don't know. Like the fact is like it doesn't really kind of wrap up as nicely as we'd like, but it does wrap up. So it does pass for me. As far as monocles, I think I'm gonna have to give it a 3. You know, I'm gonna have to give it a 3.5 as well. I didn't really like the way the ending wrapped up. I feel like it could have been, there could have been more. I feel like the ending was wrapped up so quickly. Like it had to be put in the can, you know, without really a lot of like recognition of how this was going to play out. There's information that the actual narration at the end was like added as an afterthought.
Oh yeah. No, it reads like that.
And that is unfortunate because I agree, Spencer, 100%. This movie is solid. Outside of that last 15, 20 minutes of the movie, it's a solid movie. Mm-hmm. You have all the makings of what could have been a banger of a horror movie, something that could have hooked anybody who, you know, loves that good intrigue, that good mystery, and even the aspect of like the threat of like big risk. This movie really does try to encapsulate all of those elements without really losing the heart of where Zach Gregor comes from. And that's fine. He comes from a place of comedy, so honor that. But when it comes to the point to where if you don't know how to land the plane, as Sarah so aptly put, then ultimately you're going to crash it. And thankfully this didn't crash the entire plane, but it did create enough of a disruption that I would have to knock it down to 3.5. So this movie gets a 3.5 from me as well. And of course, that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills and chills, horror movies, and the spoopities. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out over at the socials page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101. You can also catch us on Blue Sky at filmlosopherspodcast.social. Over at Instagram is where we also post our special content such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found on the only place it's ever lived, which is Jane on Scene on Instagram and Instagram only. And I swear to you, one of these days she's going to update that page. Maybe one day, you know. You said maybe. Anyway.
Okay.
Check out all of our great content on there. You can also catch us over wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a like or a subscribe or a follow. And listen in. If you like what you hear, let us know in the comment section and give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
Yes, we have.
Did you get a chance to see this movie? If you did, let us know your thoughts. Did you like the way that wrapped up? Did you think you could have done something different? We'd love to know how you feel about this movie. And of course, if you haven't had a chance, check out your local listings in your theaters nearby. Take a chance and check it out for yourself. It is still a very good movie. But again, that ending does leave, you know, a couple people divisive, you know, divided on whether or not it was a good way to wrap up the movie. So, but again, we appreciate you listening and we'll catch you next week. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Sarah. I'm intern Sarah.
She's going to get it right one of these days.
Yeah.
I got it right like a couple last times, I think.
From all of us here at the Filmlosophers, class dismissed.